We want to welcome you back to our weekly statewide conversation with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This broadcast is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the current COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Heidi Holt, and I'm live from the KAXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thank you for listening in today. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your questions this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with Ampers, the 18 community radio stations, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Peggy Flanagan is Minnesota's 50th Lieutenant Governor. She's also served as a legislator in the Minnesota House. She's the highest ranking Native American in public office in the United States. And through most of her career, she's worked to build coalitions and advocate for children and families. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, thanks for being back with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Heidi. And I want to make sure that I correct the record. I'm the highest ranking Native woman in elected office.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
All right. Thank you for doing that. I wanted to let you know I've been getting some feedback, and people say that this conversation each week has become a bright spot in their week where they're learning something, but they get some hope from elected officials like you. So thank you for continuing to do that.
I appreciate that. Thank you for that feedback. We don't always hear the good stuff.
Right. I've seen some Facebook posts. Yes, I understand. Well, this week, you and Governor Walz started a statewide safe learning tour as our students across the state got back to school in various settings. How did it go?
You know, we had a really good week this week. You know, the governor has done some school visits. I was able to do a visit with some students in Mankato, at Mankato East, who are just, you know, starting their year in distance learning. I just was at McCullough Elementary in Hastings and, you know, was watching kiddos get off the bus for their hybrid learning and lots of waving and air high fives. And my own daughter started in distance learning in second grade yesterday. We were able to meet our teacher, and we had a pretty good day yesterday. Some, you know, Wi-Fi issues, as many folks have experienced across the state, but overall, you know, we're just so grateful for our school district and administrators, teachers, students, and parents who are just stepping up and trying to make this work. And I think with the advanced planning, this feels a little bit different than it did last year, with more opportunity for face-to-face interaction, either, you know, in the classroom safely or via Zoom. So I feel pretty hopeful.
Well, good. Well, you know, teachers are kind of celebrities in the lives of kids, and I hadn't thought about, you know, you won't be meeting your teacher in person, but how did it go for your daughter? Does she like her teacher so far?
She likes her teacher so far. We actually were able to meet her teacher in the classroom, wearing masks and being socially distanced. And her teacher is just wonderful. We are really lucky to be in an amazing public school community. But her teacher, Miss Malone, is making it all happen. And you're absolutely right. They are certainly celebrities in the lives of our little ones. And, you know, they took a selfie and in their masks and are off to a good start. But I'll just be really honest, just as a parent, though, too, Miss Malone has been incredible. She has sent videos just for parents and really is a partner in learning for our kiddo. So we're really lucky, and I know that educators have been doing their best to meet parents where they're at, and students, of course.
Well, let's stick with some of the education questions that we got this week. One of our listeners said that they're concerned about students not getting back into the classroom, that they're going to fall behind. I'm concerned that this will lead to even greater disparities between different socioeconomic groups.
I also have that concern. I think that is absolutely fair. The governor and I recognize the importance and effectiveness of in-person learning. And our number one priority is the health and safety of Minnesotans, especially our little ones. As I mentioned before, we talked about what happened last spring with emergency distance learning. Everyone sort of did the best that they could. And our school districts now have had the opportunity to do more planning, be more intentional, and for all three learning models, which I suspect every school will be a part of, either in-person, hybrid, or distance learning. We invested $430 million in supporting schools to be able to come back safely and prepare for this year for technology and mental health support and tutoring for students who need some extra help. But, I agree. We know that Minnesota, leads the nation in opportunity gaps between our Black, Indigenous, and students of color and white students in the country. And so COVID has certainly laid these things bare, and we need to continue to be focused on this, listening directly to communities of color about, what it is that they need to feel engaged and supportive, and that there's some opportunities, I think, that have come out of these challenges too. Finding a learning model that works for your students, I think, has been some feedback that we've also had, and partnering with community organizations, we've been able to also work with districts to meet the needs of students of color in a way that the district wouldn't be able to do alone.
I also saw a press release this week about you and the governor having to do with students getting fed. I think that's one of the big things teachers and administrations learned last spring. They're not just school. For some kids, that's one of their best meals or only meals of the day. How are things going in that sense?
Yeah, so I think what became incredibly apparent to everyone in the state and across the country, certainly, is that school is, about more than just academics. They provide meals, community, and support for our littlest Minnesotans. And when we moved learning out of the school building, we had to figure out how to meet those needs. So the governor signed Executive Order 2082, and that requires schools to still provide meals to students who are in distance learning. And so just yesterday, the governor was at Como Park High School to help pack meals for students, and they've been able to serve 8 million meals since the beginning of going to a distance learning model last spring. And we're also happy to hear that the USDA extended the summer food program, which allows more flexibility in delivery methods for families. So we're hearing it's only through December, and it's based on available funding. So we're keeping an eye out to make sure that our students are fed. But they're required to provide meals. I know that for our district, for example, there are meals available at different stops throughout the community or at the schools themselves for a couple of hours a day. But just encourage you to contact your district to determine how those meals are being distributed. And if they are not, then you need to call the Department of Education and let us know about it.
Okay. Well, you're listening to a statewide conversation. It's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. We're learning more about the state's response to COVID-19 and focusing a little bit now on education. We heard from someone who said that their neighbor moved their kids to a Catholic school so the kids could attend in person, and that they knew someone else who had decided to homeschool her kids. Are public schools seeing a big decline in enrollment due to COVID, and will this affect funding?
So, we won't know about the numbers until later this fall because of the deadline, so we'll have a better sense soon. But anecdotally, I have heard some of the same things. The Department of Education right now is exploring what is within their authority when it comes to school funding. So as you may know, the legislature controls the purse strings, so it might be a conversation that we need to have with them to address any potential problem. And we know that Minnesota families are making decisions that are deeply personal for them this school year. But I'd say, you know, that we know public schools are really the foundation of community, and they provide stability for our community, which is why the governor and I both continue to support public schools, and we'll do so during the pandemic and beyond. I can't imagine not having our school, our public school in our community, just being, you know, home base and the community connections. I certainly am worried about it, but I have to say this is the best choice for our family, and I can't imagine making a different decision.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the legislature, so let's talk a little bit about politics. Today is the special session again, and there's a definite political rift in our world right now. We're hearing a lot of people who are angry about this 30-day extension of the peacetime emergency, and I know we have talked about it before, but I want to talk a little bit more about the governor's executive powers. But I want to play for you a clip when he sat in for you on this statewide conversation, what he had to say about it.
Question everything people in elected office do. I think especially executives. Question everything we do. See if we're basing it on the facts. And then fight those fights that need to be fought where you think it's wrong. I think you were wrong, Governor, on this one. I think we could have done restaurant seating or whatever it might be. I would try and defend that with data. The one that I do not understand one of the most cost-effective and one of the most epidemiologically effective means is wearing the mask, especially when you're inside, and limiting social interactions and social distancing and washing your hands.
That's Governor Tim Walz as he sat in for you 1 week. And so I wonder if we can talk more about the executive powers, what you've been able to do with those, and why you need to continue them.
So, I appreciate having a good substitute. And, you know, if your substitute is the governor, that's a pretty good deal. I think he did a nice job. I agree with him. What we've been able to do throughout this time is to make decisions that allow us to do testing and tracing, to provide personal protective equipment or PPE to hospitals and clinics and healthcare providers. And again, that testing is really critically important, as we all know. But the real thing is that we are still in an emergency. Every state in the union is still under a state of emergency. The federal government under President Trump is still in a state of emergency. The emergency itself is not over. And I'll say it again, just because you're over the pandemic does not mean it's over you. And if I can just, you know, say, like, this has allowed us to respond quickly and in real time. When we've had to wait, to move things through the legislature, like $100 million in housing assistance, it took weeks and weeks and weeks. Finally, the governor and I had to just make that decision to get it out to folks because we know that the rent comes due every month. And people can't be evicted because of the executive order, which is another thing that, you know, I think is really critical to the just overall health and safety of Minnesotans. But we had to make that decision because the legislature couldn't get it done. And so I would prefer that we not have to continue to do this and could move quickly with the legislature. But that just hasn't proven to be the case. And so we are still in a state of emergency. And I guess I would just add, as someone who has lost a family member to COVID and someone who, you know, doesn't want anyone else to have to go through this, it's just incredibly frustrating to hear that. And as we see COVID disproportionately affecting Black, Indigenous, and people of color in the state, suddenly that's when people claim the emergency is over. It's pretty disheartening to me.
Yeah. Well, we've talked before in these conversations about how tribal government has responded to COVID-19. On our morning show today, we were talking about an uptick in COVID numbers in the town of Ely with the Timberjay newspaper publisher Marshall Helmberger. He was telling us that on August 20th, there were less than 5 cases in Ely, and now the number is at 21 on September 11th. Ely has a population of about 3,300 people, and we're just going to listen to a clip from that.
Seen a big jump, so it's not really clear how that's getting here now. I mean, obviously, we have some community spread going on when you're seeing these kinds of numbers, so it's certainly a concern.
Yeah, sounds like Boys Ford is doing what you're supposed to be doing, testing and isolating. So that
yes, they are. In fact, yeah. We had an editorial this week lauding some of the tribes around northern Minnesota that, you know, just because they have taken kind of, a leadership position, really, in dealing with COVID. They've been very aggressive.
Very aggressive is what he said there. But I wonder if you could help us look at how tribal government has led when it comes to COVID-19. What stands out to you?
Well, first of all, I would just, agree with Marshall that is absolutely what we've seen from our tribal governments. And specifically talking about, Boys Fort, Chairwoman Kathy Chavers is no joke and has just been an incredible leader during this time. I think because we've been able to form such strong relationships with the tribes in Minnesota before the pandemic, it has allowed us to work really closely because we've established trust and good communication. We have looked to the tribes and the work that they're doing around their own enterprises, either with, hotels or gaming, golf courses, to see what best practices they're using, and then encouraging folks to follow suit. The messages that are also working in Indian country or in our communities are grounded really in caring for our relatives, caring for community, protecting our elders by wearing masks, washing hands, practicing that social distancing, staying away from others if you're sick. The message I think that has worked for non-natives has been grounded in in the economy, but I think, that matters, of course, but really it's protecting our relatives. And our tribal leaders have made just difficult, incredibly difficult decisions, knowing that they don't have a tax base, right, to draw from. And so when you close your enterprises, you're also closing, down your ability to have an economy that's working. And so they've made a lot of sacrifices and now are getting back to things, safely. And as they move to reopen casinos, again, we watched and learned from them how to do it right with really a focus on the safety of workers and customers. So I am grateful for the tribal leaders we have in the state who have been tremendous partners in ensuring that Minnesotans are being protected.
As a journalist who's looking at 14 counties every day to see how the numbers are that in our coverage area, I'm very impressed with how the transparency of the tribes. Because sometimes county governments are not always telling you where they're coming from, and it's just a little bit tougher. And I wish that we would take a cue from what's happening at Boys Fort and Leech Lake and White Earth. They really have done a great job.
I appreciate that, and I think that's right. And, I certainly have also heard frustrations from the tribes with the lack of transparency from counties, too. This isn't moments for gotchas or, holding back numbers. We all just need to put it out there so people know the seriousness, of what it is that we're facing, and can make the choices in order to keep themselves safe in their community.
Yeah, well, let's move into some topics that the Minnesota Department of Health was talking about in their press conferences this week. Tom had a question for you. He said, this week we heard that the health department has been investigating bars and restaurants to see how well they are complying with the state's COVID rules and regulations. They said that about half were out of compliance. What do you attribute this to, and are the rules hard to follow or unclear, or is it a way that these businesses might be thumbing their noses at the state?
So I think, that most Minnesota bar and restaurant owners are doing their very best to follow the rules. And we've been in, you know, constant communication with them through the Department of Health and also through economic employment and economic development. You know, they understand the importance of keeping their workers and customers safe. And so just to be clear, you know, the goal of enforcement is to identify those places that aren't following the rules so we can help get them back in compliance, not to come down on businesses. We want people to be safe. And, you know, I don't think anyone is interested in being, you know, the establishment that folks can point to as to, you know, hotspots or places that caused, you know, spread in the community. So, you know, we want people to be safe. We want folks to follow the rules and work in partnership with them so that these businesses, you know, will also be able to continue after the pandemic.
Well, let's move on to kind of another group setting or places where things have been spreading. There was a report this week that came out of the Sturgis rally, and I know the last I heard on numbers when in Minnesota was at maybe 51 Minnesotans that had gotten COVID after going to Sturgis. But this was a bigger report, and some people felt like they made some pretty far out claims that the motorcycle rally had led to 250,000 cases and billions of dollars of healthcare costs. What do you know about this, and how do you think about that in terms of what's going on?
So I can't, you know, speak to what's happening in other states, but, you know, I do know that Sturgis was an event that brought together hundreds of thousands of people from across the country. And we know that many of the individuals who attended the event did not follow some of, you know, our basic community mitigation guidance, social distancing, masking, avoiding large crowds. You know, I think some of us saw the footage from concerts that were happening. And because of this, you know, it was an event that had the potential to result in COVID transmissions. And as I said, I can't comment on, you know, other states or on the SDSU claims, but I can say in Minnesota, we've identified 51 cases, 3 hospitalizations, and 1 death from folks who had reported attending Sturgis. And we're aware that secondary and tertiary transmissions associated with the event are occurring. And this is someone who didn't attend Sturgis, but was infected by someone who did. And, you know, I think Governor Noem made an interesting choice in allowing Sturgis to continue. And I use the word interesting in the most Minnesotan way possible, you know, because, you know, we are seeing the effects of this. And I don't know if a Smash Mouth concert is worth it. You know, if you are going to be impacting your own health or the health of others around you. We saw the same thing with the, you know, wedding that happened in Southwest Minnesota. It's had a pretty significant impact on that community and now on people who live outside that community. So it's not just about you. It's about, you know, the other folks that you're around, especially if you're asymptomatic and don't know that you're spreading it to others.
You know, this is just me and what I worry about sometimes, but we've talked about the political rifts, that people are angry right now, you know, might be due to presidential politics or that no one's lived under this before. But I worry that people aren't being transparent when it comes to tracing. They're not saying if they went to Sturgis. They're not saying if they were at things. How do you deal with that kind of worry?
I mean, you know, this, again, isn't to punish people, right? It's really grounded in public health. And public health is all about the kind of data that we can gather, you know, and our tracers or our folks who are having conversations with people about, you know, if they're infected or who else they've been around. It's again, not to get people in trouble, but to try to get a handle on this virus. We continue to see that we are kind of going it alone here in Minnesota because of a complete lack of leadership from the federal government and from the president. And you know, I just, again, please, 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 we need folks to be transparent and honest so that we can ensure, you know, you might feel uncomfortable or embarrassed, but that feeling of discomfort, I think, is worth preventing others from getting sick, or ultimately from losing their lives.
Yeah. Well, before we go, do you know anything new about vaccines? We had a question about whether Minnesota was part of a new vaccine study that was just halted. What do you know about that?
So we are all sort of, you know, everything that we were taught in like fourth grade about our hypotheses and an experiment and results are sort of happening, right, in real time, because we're all focused on this vaccine. And, you know, Health Partners in Minnesota was participating in a vaccine trial, which was paused to evaluate after a participant had a potentially adverse reaction that we heard about just a few days ago. We don't know if this was related directly to the vaccine or not. But this is how, you know, safety in the safety system is supposed to work. You know, so pausing to evaluate a situation is a good thing. We should rush to take comfort in the fact that pharma is following their protocols. And, you know, just to be clear, this participant isn't from Minnesota. You know, there are folks who are participating across the country. But our commitment has always been to a safe vaccine, and we want there to be a robust safety, you know, safety in place and evaluations. And if there is a question of safety, it needs to be thoroughly evaluated before the trial continues. Minnesotans have shown that they are willing to, you know, participate in a vaccine trial, which is great. And as soon as the pause is over, the trial will begin again if no serious issues have been identified. But Heidi, this really just, again, goes to, we are not going to be able, you know, to get back to, you know, any sense of you know, normalcy, whatever that means, right? Until we have a vaccine that is available. And so, again, the best that we can do is to continue to practice those things that I've said every week and will continue to say, which is wearing a mask, keeping distance between you and others who are not in your household, washing your hands, staying home if you're sick, because ultimately I want people to have faith in this vaccine and in this process, so that we can make sure that everyone who, you know, can get vaccinated, so we are not right back here again, and that we know that we have had the flu vaccination and flu shots available for years and years and years, and this is the most important year for people to get their flu shot. We cannot have hospitals be overwhelmed by folks who both have COVID, right, and those individuals who have the flu shot as well. It's also just a good way to be a good neighbor, a good community member, to not spread that around. My daughter has asthma. We get the flu vaccine every year because that is how we take care of our families and take care of each other.
Well, I'll give you just 1 minute. Sorry about this, but someone wrote into us about the census, and they're worried about the accurate count in this year's census given the pandemic. What are you hearing, and what would you like to remind us of?
So, you know, I am quite disappointed that the federal administration decided to finish the count early during the pandemic, you know, which means that we only have 19 days left for folks to be counted. So for every person that we miss, we risk losing out on funding that we need for critical public services, all of the things that we talked about during the pandemic. And it's, you know, incredibly important that for every person counted, we remind folks that it means about $2,800 per year or $28,000 until the next census, for, you know, these federal dollars that come into the state. I do not want to forfeit those investments in our communities, especially in Indian country and in tribal communities where we are the most undercounted group 10 years ago. We can't let that happen again. People need to know that we're still here. So please make sure that if you haven't filled out your census, you go to 2020census.gov, or you can call 844-330-2020. And I'm going to be talking about the census every day between now and the end of the month. I'm a census nerd, and we deserve to be seen and heard and valued and counted.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We've run out of time. Lieutenant Governor, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Have a great weekend.
You too. This broadcast, a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state, in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at KAXE.org. And don't forget, you can ask a question for next week. Call 612-562-9895 or COVID@AMPRS.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE KBXE. Thanks for listening.